Court will now call Miguel Briones versus the State of Texas. May it please the court, Mr. Danny Burns arguing for the appellant, Ms. Tanya Dahoney arguing for the state.
Mr. Burns, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. This case is a DWI case. Mr. Briones was arrested for allegedly driving while intoxicated. They did the usual talking to them. They did the walking her and all the standardized field sobriety tests. They took him back. They, at the police station, they read the, didn't actually read, well, I guess they did read the entire DIC 24 to him. Mr. Briones was having problems understanding the officer. It was reflected by a couple of passages in the proceedings, and he asked the police officer to slow down because he was hearing impaired. That's one of the problems we have here. The ADA is one of the main issues we're addressing. There's a lot of case law on the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act, but there's not a lot of case law regarding the application of the ADA to a criminal proceeding. It has been utilized against police departments. We cited those cases in our brief. And the Mr. Briones is an individual who was born, I said with his ears in my brief, I left out the house, born without his ears. And the surgeons were able to take parts and cartilage from other parts of his body and somehow building two new ears, and they actually looked very well. Mr. Briones, however, has a, forgot the term, but he has a deafness to where, which is a relative deafness, is the term. It means that although he has a hard time hearing, he can hear certain words, but he is an individual who has enough incapacity that he is labeled as a disabled individual. In this case, the police officers had some sort of knowledge. The officer does testify and admit that Mr. Briones, he saw him trying to delivery, saw him in various actions. He asked him to take the breath test. He had to ask him twice, because Mr. Briones obviously didn't hear it the first time. And the question is,
Did you watch the videotape? Because you say obviously didn't hear him. Did you watch the videotape?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe that he's looking away. The officer asked him, and he makes no response. He's made responses every other time that the officer has asked him questions on the tape. If the court will review that,
I have reviewed it, and I didn't see what you saw. Can you tell me where it is that you saw that, because I did not see that.
If the court will look when the officer reads, or after the officer reads the DIC 24, and recall that Mr. Briones and couple asked him to slow down.
Asked him to slow down, but didn't say, I don't understand you or I can't hear you, and he was reading rapidly.
He did not say that. What he did say, do was stand there. And when the officer asked him if he would take the breath test, he made no response. The officer had to ask him a second time. The officer, in doing that, was clear that Mr. Briones obviously didn't hear it. I believe that you can take that from the fact that the totality of his tape, where every other time that Mr. Briones has been able to watch the officer's lips or has heard a large amount or large or loud statements such as seven. Mr. Briones testified that the only reason why he needed to take seven steps was because he heard the word, the letter seven, after he saw, I mean, the number seven from the officer, after he saw the officer demonstrate the walk and turn.
Well, if he couldn't hear the reading or the DIC 24, why did he ask spontaneously, how do you do the blood test? Obviously he got that from somewhere, and that would have to be from the reading of the DIC 24, would it not?
He was, Your Honor, but we're not saying he didn't hear anything of the DIC 24, but he didn't have a substantial hearing from the DIC 24 as advanced by the officer.
He could read it. It was right there in front of him.
But he was trying to read, and he can only read at a third or fourth grade level. The words of the DIC 24 are rather complicated, and if you watch the tape, he's not reading as close after the officer doesn't slow down. It's more of a look at the side of the tape, and you can obviously tell that he's getting frustrated with the fact that the officer is going so fast and he can't understand what's going on.
But the officer does slow down, does he not?
Very little. I mean, it's still fast. The other officer even admitted during the cross that, you know, he didn't read it slowly. He read it as you normally read it. So I would submit to the court that no, he didn't really slow down. And the case law is
Mr. Burns, so when I was a trial judge, I could remember asking lawyers to slow down. That doesn't mean that I didn't have a comprehension of it.
Well, no, you were protecting the court reporter who was there trying to speak through that.
I made the point that just because you ask somebody to slow down doesn't necessarily mean you don't have a comprehension of what they're saying.
That could be true, Your Honor, but there would have to be other factors why you would ask that they slow down.
Well,
why
would they? At no point in here does he say, I don't understand what you're talking about, or words to that effect.
And that's part of his disability, Your Honor. As this Latone Stout, the expert presented by the defense, points out that handicapped individuals, people who are deaf, don't like to admit to their handicap, and therefore, or their disability, I should say, and therefore they compensate. They sort of yes or no or whatever without really understanding what they're being asked. And that's one of the problems, and one of the reasons why there needed to be an interpreter.
Do you have anything in your mouth? And he was looking straight down at the floor when he was asked that question, and he said no, and they said, show me, and he stuck his tongue out.
Again, we're not saying he didn't hear anything. We're saying, and the officer's tone goes up and down as well during the tape. But the officer understood, and admits that he understood that Mr. Briones obviously had a hearing problem. The hearing aids that the officer saw, you can tell from the tape, although he does have long hair, that there's no wire or anything of that nature on the hearing hearing aid coming out, and you can occasionally see his ears and tell that the period being in it. The law, as stated by the mentioned by the state, the Linton case, they talk about, well, the court said, well, you obviously can understand and all this other stuff, but that's good enough for government work. But that's not what that opinion says. What that opinion says is that the trial court gave him three interpreters, and he wanted the better interpreter. And you don't get necessarily, you know, the Rolex of interpreters or expert witnesses, but you have to get somebody who's competent. With the three expert interpreters that were used in Linton, they felt that, you know, he obviously would got the benefit of an interpreter and to assist him in that case. In the Amaya case, this court's case, the state indicates that somehow that shifts the burden to the defense on the ultimate issue. That's not what this court said. What this court said is exactly like it is done in almost all suppression hearings, where there's not a warrant on the arrest, and that is that the defense has to raise the issue. And actually where the defense is alleging illegal conduct by the police, suppression hearing, then the mere making of the objection shifts the burden from the defense to the state. Once you show, or if the state was stipulating, there was no warrant for the search. In this case, in Amaya case, what this court said was that Amaya didn't raise the issue. He presented no evidence that he couldn't hear, or that he presented no evidence that there was any impairment. Mr. Briones took the stand at the motion to suppress hearing and testified. He didn't understand. He could understand certain words. He could lip read some, that he was having problems. He did not understand that he did not have to take the test. The test goes through and talks about, you know, different things, and, you know, taking your license or whatever. But he says that he testified he didn't understand that he had a right not to take that test. And had he understood that right, he would invoke that right and not take the test. I think that based upon the totality of everything was done, that's, you know, a valid, or at least his testimony supported by the record.
Was the testimony that he didn't understand because he couldn't hear, or he didn't understand because he didn't understand legal words?
Both. He did say that he was having problems hearing, that he was having delivery, but his main concern was the fact that the officer wouldn't explain legal terms and legal action.
I didn't see where he ever asked the officer to explain legal terms, and that wouldn't be important under the ADA. That could be true for anyone who does not have a good education and doesn't understand legal terms. Right?
That is true. In fact, I've had some very well educated individuals who get read that in DIC 24 and still take the damn test. I don't understand it. You know, why would a reasonable person want to give the state something to use against them? You know, you pass it and you still get prosecuted. I mean, that's beside it. Mr. Briones' problem was he did have a hearing problem. And again, the officer admitted that at one point in time he saw the hearing aids, even though the battery was dead in them. There's nothing to refute that Mr. Briones didn't have. The burden, though, was we presented that, therefore, the burden of proving that he didn't need an interpreter shifted to the state. The findings of fact by the judge was that the appellant harbored a fair level of comprehension regarding the statutory warnings he received, as the state points out. But, you know, I would make an analogy to that, it's like the municipal court judge who says, you know, obviously the defendant can speak English because, you know, I asked everybody, is there anybody here who doesn't understand English if he didn't say anything? And that's still the same thing we got here. You know, that the judge says he had a fair level of comprehension when, in fact, he's testified that he didn't understand the words, he didn't have the ability to hear very well, that he had to read the lips of the officer in order to be able to get by with it as far as he did. And I submit to the court that the Gonzalez case is also very instructive. State mentions that, but all that says is that, you know, in translating from English to Spanish, and we have some real problems in Texas, I don't know who they do their translations, but they translate that this would be used against you in the future, rather than saying in a subsequent prosecution, which I think would be significant, but the court didn't see that as significant and said that was substantial complaint. However, you know, the statute required both providing of the accused with statutory warning and the reading of that statutory warning. And what they do say, of course, is that substantial compliance is good enough for government. And again, that's Texas Transportation Code 724.015. The problem with Mr. Briones is that had he not had the breath test, there was very little evidence that he was intoxicated at the time. Everything could be pretty well explained. How was the test? He has great hearing loss. Experts
tested. You have 2 minutes remaining.
Okay, thank you. And I have the same problem with Mr. Briones to some extent, not quite as bad. I didn't hear a little TV. And I appreciate you pointing that out. But he does not contend that he didn't hear anything. He just contends that he didn't hear it and understand it to what he would have had he been given the opportunity of a professional interpreter. The deaf and the hearing impaired have a right under the ADA to the assistance of the help of experts to put them in the same position as anyone else.
But didn't the officer dispute whether or not Mr. Briones had produced his card, his ADA card?
I didn't do the motion, but for some reason nobody asked him that. And the state didn't bring it back, so I assumed that he did. And put him on the stand and said, no, Mr. Jones never showed me his car. He was just not asked that. And the officer never volunteered that he was showing that car. Instead, he put Mr. Briones on the stand. He said he had his ADA card out when the hearing impaired and present that to the officer. The officer made a statement, you're okay, you can read lips. I'm not sure.
Because really, outside of that, there's not really, the evidence is kind of disputed as to how much the officer could tell that Mr. Briones understood or didn't understand.
That, to some extent, that's true. However, he does know that he had to have to use hearing aids. He does admit that he had to ask a second time regarding the breath test. That Mr. Briones, when he asked questions, not get a legal opinion from the officer, which would be improper, but rather to explain the now the procedures, whether or not he had to have a blood test and a breath test. They were going to take him to the hospital or what for that. So I can show you.
Yeah, your time is expired. We'll hear your final thoughts on that.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
For Mr. Burns and Alito High School students. This is a case that the state would ask that we have an affirmance of the defendant's conviction. And I was informed shortly before we started argument that we have a few more minutes to perhaps include some of the facts since we read the briefs, y'all read the briefs, but they have not. So I'm going to backtrack just for a moment with your permission. This is a DOI case, and this is a DOI case where the defendant contested the voluntariness of his breath test. He took a breath test pre-trial, and then he pled guilty, and he's appealing that pre-trial motion with the permission of the trial court. And Mr. Burns is his counsel on appeal. I am the prosecutor of the state. We don't see the facts entirely the same, but we are required as appellate attorneys to view the facts as channeled through what the trial judge found. And the trial judge entered a written order that summarized what he heard at that pretrial hearing, and that tells us on appeal what the trial judge was thinking, and then he also made conclusions of law. And the trial judge has a note in his order denying the defendant's motion to suppress and saying that there ADA or with the voluntariness of his consent to take the breath test. So that, yes, there was some level of hearing impairment on the part of this defendant. Also, the trial court found specifically that the videotape and the officer's testimony, because at this hearing, the only evidence was the officer who testified, and then a video came not from the scene, not from one of those in-car videos, but from the actual tox lab room, and that's the video that was being discussed earlier. That video shows the colloquy, the discussion between the officer and another officer in the room and the defendant in the intoxicated room. So that was all of the evidence that was covered. And from that evidence, the judge said, finding the fact, that that evidence showed a fair level of comprehension with regard to the information contained in a statute that is the substance of our controversy. Because in Texas, we have implied consent law. Everybody wants to drive when they become a teenager. That driving is not a right, it is a privilege in this state and other states. And so when you get your driver's license, you impliedly consent to give a sample of ingrown or blood if an officer has reasonable suspicion and probable cause to arrest you from DWI. So everybody with the driver's license has already impliedly consented to give that sample. But in order to make that sample, if you're arrested, voluntary, there are warnings that are read by officers. It's called a DIC 24. I don't even know what DIC stands for, quite frankly. It's a transportation code. And what that warning does is tell you what the consequences of taking the test or refusing the test are, because people lose their licenses and other kinds of consequences come from that. So that's what gives us the question in our case, Turpin, on the voluntariness of a breath test. So in this situation, this defendant took a breath test. It doesn't matter for our purposes what that breath test showed. He later pled guilty to DWI and he's appealing. But the judge found, because the defense at the hearing complained about the ADA, which is a federal, basically a federal civil rights permit law, it's like the other federal civil rights laws that go to race, gender, religion, those sort of things. It's a federal civil rights law so that we can't discriminate against people who are disabled. I mean, if you have a grandfather who has a disability from being in the war, or someone has blindness or hearing, those three disabilities, it protects those people. That's a good thing. In this situation, the defendant claimed that the ADA was violated because this police officer didn't get an interpreter for this defendant who claims he's hearing impaired. And I say claims. In our record, of course, the judge found some level of hearing impairment. But as you've heard from the judges who have clearly listened to the videotape that we're talking about, there's places in the record where it appears the defendant heard that he, at the hearing, said he couldn't understand. And the trial court also entered a conclusion of law, and that conclusion of law, based on the transportation code, which is in question, that he said that the law enforcement officer in this situation followed that requirement in the transportation code. The transportation code requirement requires two things. It's 724.015, and it requires those warnings I mentioned. Those warnings are said in the code to be required to be given to somebody before they request a sample in writing or orally. Okay, our videotape shows that our police officer read the oral warning to the defendant, and that's what was being discussed as far as the defendant not understanding, and then the defendant in his hot little hand, with his eyes glued to it, had the written warning too. Now, our case law says, this court has said it in our State v. Amaya case, which Justice Walker, you authored that opinion, that while the transportation code says you have to give it in writing or orally, substantial compliance, one of those is always required. And many other courts have also said it. It's not just an opinion from this court. So that's really the standard we're looking at here. But as far as the ADA, I just want to take that off of the table here. The ADA in this situation, obviously a valid law. I don't believe Mr. Burns cites it in his brief, but the way it would even impact a criminal case, of course, would be through 3823. And 3823 is our Texas exclusionary rule. So if someone if a law enforcement or someone else violates any state or federal constitution or legal provision, then evidence is excluded. Because we don't want it, it's a deterrent sort of a thing. It protects people from bad policing and breaking laws in order to get evidence of crime. But that didn't happen here. And the AEA says, and the expert that the defense brought at trial said, that you can reasonably accommodate an impairment, or a disability. And in this situation, as you judges have seen from the video, the defendant read the warning. So the same legal theory that saves us from any ADA compliance or incompliance also shows substantial compliance according to 725, the transportation code. So in this situation, we don't have a federal violation that would invoke 3823, and that reading shows that we were able, under state Yamaha, to substantially comply with the statute. But there's more, because the trial court also found, as I told you, that this person could appear. And quite frankly, the state doesn't want to appear to be beating up on someone who has a hearing impairment. But some facts that I want to say, it's kind of, there's a credibility issue, and I think Judge Kavanaugh, in his finding, as to whether or not there really even was a disability and whether or not there was any compliance or need for an indication of the ADA. And the facts in the record show that the police officer said that when he arrested the person, he saw very large hearing aids, and he saw that the man was reading his lips. The police officer, and there was a question earlier, sorry, it was judge, asked about whether or not the police officer was questioned about having the defendant having an ADA card. And the officer said in his testimony that there was no affirmative telling from the defendant that, hey, I'm deaf, hey, I'm hearing impaired. That was a question. There was no cross-examination by the defense counsel, a different attorney from Mr. Burns, about that. That same day in the hearing, Mr. Briones testified later, and he popped out a little white ADA card, I believe it's Defense Exhibit 1, and said that he had given that to the police officer. So there was a conflict in that testimony. The trial court, who sits in the position of seeing witnesses testify, so he can tell from how they talk, you know, when you see somebody, you know if you believe them in your heart of hearts or not. Trial judges are imbued with deference toward binding because they get to see the actual witnesses, unlike those of us who are up on appeal reading it from a cold record, and the judges too. So the trial judge gets almost total deference under the legal standard of abusement. In this situation, the judge found, yes, there was some impairment, but that there was also a fair level of comprehension. So he decided those facts for us to deal with in the appellate law here. Also, the defense called an expert, and while I said something about the cold record memo, normally reading something doesn't give you the energy of what happens at the hearing, but when you read the record and you see Vincent Giordano's cross-examination with the defense expert, you can see that it was actually a little heated, even from the cold record. And there was no tangible evidence, no medical records, no evidence. There was testimony from the defendant and from the expert who had only gotten her information from what the defendant said. The person charged with DWI who kind of has a reason to come up with a read and excuse for not understanding the warnings. No tangible evidence, no hospital records of the prior surgery, no expert who, I can't think of the word, is a doctor, type of doctor who does it with ears, and not only a doctor, a lawyer. An ear, nose, and throat expert. How about that? Can't think of the specific specialty.
Oh,
there you go, Richard Boyd. Nothing of that nature to show that this person truly was hearing impaired. In fact, he said he had the surgery fixed, but of course he still wore hearing aids, so he had some problems. Then there was also testimony I don't think was mentioned that, okay, not only had he had his prior hearing impairment, but then the defendant testified, oh, the batteries in my hearing aid weren't working, and oh, my hearing aid, because the batteries weren't working, I took it out and put it in my pocket when he got to the intox room. So it's kind of like, which is it? Can he not hear? Are the batteries not working? He took it off? it just kind of sounds a little bit like some excuses. And you can't tell on the video because this guy has long hair, nice long thick hair, that covers up his ears. So you can't see whether or not he's wearing hearing aids at that time or not to judge if that was credible. So that's the contested evidence, but no matter what that was, we give it all through the trial court's findings and facts. So as I see this legal issue boiling down, and I've kind of thought about it since we're dealing with something we don't normally deal with in a criminal case, the ADA, and then also the typical substantial compliance group issue, this is a de novo question for this court, and the de novo question itself is, does the record show substantial compliance where the defendant received a written DIC and had fair comprehension of the verbal warnings, and the written warning overcame and accommodated any ADA disability? And that's the question for this report. And of course, although you give total, the total difference to the trial court's findings back, you review this legal conclusion de novo. I think that's probably, oh, there was one other kind of comment about comprehension versus hearing. And the big words that we lawyers would use, or that the Texas Transportation Code, I guess actually the legislature used in coming up with the DIC. And ADA does not apply to comprehension that I'm aware of. And so that's not an issue. The defendant did testify, he didn't understand certain words. And again, there's kind of a credibility gap because at one point he said in his testimony he didn't understand the word love. He bragged about the fact that he could read pretty good and he got through high school. So we're not dealing with someone who's truly at a third or fourth grade level like maybe a little sister or little brother we have at that age. We're dealing with an adult who went through high school, who was under arrest for DWI, and who the trial court found could have fair level of comprehension, but even if he didn't, even if you want to completely believe that this man who responds to all sorts of verbal cues, including sticking his tongue out when he's looking down the floor to respond to the police officer on the video. Even if you think he can't hear anything, he had that written warning. And so just like State Viamana, in this case, needs to be affirmed, although State Viamana was a state bill. And so he asked and had harder burdens to approach in that situation to overcome the trial court ruling. Unless there's any questions, the state asked that this conviction for DWI be affirmed.
Thank you.
Mr. Burns, rebuttal?
Just a couple things. First, just to hone in, don't know why I don't want to attention to it, but she misstated the transportation code. It's not or, it's and. A officer shall inform the person of the consequences of the action, which is taking a breath test. Orally and in writing. She said oral in writing. The statute doesn't say that, but the case officer gets there. But I just want to point out the statute does say clearly that she can vote. The other point, the expert does, as presented by the defense, does talk about the fact that the symptom of the death is that they try to mask and minimize their disabilities, and bragging about being able to hear or get through high school, which should be a very daunting task in some school districts.
Mr. Burns, let me be the devil's advocate for a minute. And let's suppose that the devil's advocate believes that lawyers, judges, high school students, and drivers of cars should be responsible and take responsibility for their own actions. And here we have a situation where your client is hearing impaired and is responsible for seeing that at least one of his hearing aids is working. He's also responsible for articulating to the officer if he doesn't understand something, that he doesn't understand something. And so the bottom line here, being the devil's advocate, is that your client is not taking responsibility for his own actions, which led to your contention that he did not understand the warnings that were given him.
The answer to that is simple. The Again, Mr. Briones was a symptom of his impairment and his disability is that he does not want to be viewed as being less than anyone else.
And he should not take responsibility for that?
Well, Your Honor, should an insane person who thinks that that an individual is a Martian here to kill everybody, and she should kill them, should they be held responsible for that? If it's a symptom of their disease, no, they should not be held responsible for that. If their disease causes them...
If that's a symptom of his disease, when he was doing the heel to toe test, he asked numerous questions to make sure he got it right. Did he have the right foot in front of the left foot? Is that where he was supposed to start? Is that the first step? Because he was supposed to step seven times. He was supposed to turn to the left. He stopped and he asked if he was turning the right way. He asked numerous questions during the course of the administration of that test. So thereby not exhibiting the symptom of his disease that you're talking about.
However, that is again, if you look at it, it shows that he didn't understand what the officer was doing and was trying to mask it. However, he got to the point where he didn't know what to do, and he was just lost. He had to drop that mask and ask questions. I think that goes to the fact that he is a disabled person and that he didn't understand.
Well, he really wasn't lost. He just asked if starting out was considered the first step or not. That's not really being lost, is it?
He's not understanding as to what he's supposed to be doing. Yeah.
Okay.
And on the provision, they gave you written notice. The ADA rules and regulations provide that although in some circumstances, written notice may be sufficient to prevent effective communication, in many instances, they may not be. For example, a qualified interpreter may be necessary when the information being communicated is complex or is exchanged for a lengthy period of time. Factors to consider include the context in which the communication is taking place, the number of people involved, and the importance of the communication. Again, the DIC 24, especially when Fred rather quickly through to somebody who's never heard it before. If you look, and this court has seen other cases, the officers have problems reading that thing. It is so hard. And they fumble through. They're not intoxicated, but they fumble through and they can't say those words. So I submit that the DIC 24 qualifies for that type of complicated and complex information being conveyed. The fact that you're under arrest, having come close to that situation a couple of times myself, it's a very telling and very debilitating act. Judge McBride,
Okay,
I mean, thank you.
Mr. Burns, Ms. Mahoney, thank you very much for your arguments here today. They've been very helpful to the court. Your case is submitted, and we will take a couple-minute recess before the next case to allow counsel to get situated.